Hello, Buzzkillers. You've always wanted to be a patron of the arts, haven't you? Well, now you can. Become a patron of Professor Buzzkill by clicking on the Patreon link at ProfessorBuzzkill.com. There are many levels of monthly pledges starting at only a dollar. And here's what you'll get in return. A warm feeling inside, the thanks of a grateful professor, shout-outs on the blog and podcast, coffee cups and t-shirts, and much, much more. But the most important thing is knowing that you'll be helping bring enlightenment to humanity. Thanks, Buzzkillers. Now here comes that music.
Ladies and gentlemen, the sound you hear is a buzzsaw ripping through a painting of George Washington chopping down cherry trees. It's time for Professor Buzzkill, busting myths and taking names.
Hello, Buzzkillers. It's the old professor here. You know how we are at the Buzzkill Institute about the veracity of historical quotations. For the most part, the quotations you see on pictures and in email messages and on posters have no basis in fact. The people that are supposed to have said them either never said them, there's no evidence that they said them, or they certainly weren't the first people to have said them. They didn't coin them. Quotations from Chief Seattle, the famous 19th century Native American leader, particularly those that have an ecological tone, if you will, appear on posters, photographs, monuments, and almost everywhere that people want to express the idea that Native Americans had, if you will, natural wisdom about the land, and that the tragedy is that the land was taken away from them. As a young man in the Duwamish tribe in the Northwest, Seattle proved himself to be a great warrior and later a great chief. But by the late 1840s, he was starting to lose territory to other Native American groups, such as the Snohomish. And once white settlers started moving in from the east, Seattle and Duwamish were caught between two expanding forces, the Snohomish and the eastern settlers. To make a long story short, although he wasn't happy about it, Seattle was able to negotiate an agreement with the leader of the settlers, named David Swinson Maynard, to retreat, that is, Seattle and the Duwamish would retreat, to a reserved portion of land that wasn't under contention with either the Snohomish or the white settlers. Maynard was genuinely impressed with Seattle's dignity and with his apparent care for his people, and he proposed, that is, Maynard, that the city founded in northwestern Washington state, eventually, be named after the great chief. Okay, so far, so good. But here's where the problems start, at least in terms of the way Chief Seattle's words and wisdom have come down to us over the years. There is some debate about whether the speech that's so famously quoted from Seattle to Maynard occurred on the 12th of January, 1854, the 11th of March, 1854, or the 22nd of January, 1855. And even though the March 11th date, 1854, is the one you'll see most often in posters and stuff, the 1855 date is more solid. So what I'm trying to say right off the bat is, even when it happened is in contention. Anyway, here's what happened. Governor Stevens of the Washington Territory took a tour of Native American settlements in the northwest corner of the state in 1854 and 1855. Stevens said he wanted to hear from council chiefs about their grievances, and he wanted to sign treaties to try to assuage those grievances. On the 22nd of January, 1855, if we accept that as one of the best dates, Governor Stevens met with Seattle and the leaders of many North American groups in the area in order to parcel out the reservation land and to sign what was known as the Treaty of Port Elliot. Now, after Stevens gave a short speech explaining the treaty, Chief Seattle got up to speak. Now, here's the most popular version of what he said. Now, I've put version in quotation marks, but the phrase quotation marks in this context is a little problematic. Anyway, this is the most popular version of what he said. Chief Seattle, that is. Yonder sky that has wept tears of compassion upon my people for centuries untold, and which to us appears changeless and eternal, may change. Today is fair. Tomorrow it may be overcast with clouds. My words are like the stars that never change. Whatever Seattle says, the great chief at Washington, that's Washington, D.C., he means in this case, can rely upon with as much certainty as he can upon the return of the sun or the seasons. The white chief, in this case he's referring to Stevens, the governor of Washington Territory, says that the big chief at Washington, the president, sends us greetings of friendship and goodwill. This is kind of him, for we know He has little need of our friendship in return. His people are many. They are like the grass that covers vast prairies. My people are few. They resemble the scattering trees of a storm-swept plain. The great, and I presume good, white chief sends us word that he wishes to buy our land, but is willing to allow us enough to live comfortably. This indeed appears just, even generous, for the red man no longer has rights that he need respect. He, in this case, meaning the white man, Governor Stevens, and ultimately the president. And the offer may be wise, also, as we are no longer in need of an extensive country. There was a time when our people covered the land as the waves of a wind-ruffled sea cover its shell-paved floor, but that time long since passed away with the greatness of tribes that are now but a mournful memory. I will not dwell on, nor mourn over, our untimely decay, nor reproach my pale-faced brothers with hastening it, as we too may have been somewhat to blame. We will ponder your proposition, and when we decide, we will let you know. But should we accept it, I here and now make this condition that we will not be denied the privilege of visiting at any time the tombs of our ancestors, friends, and children. Every part of this soil is sacred in the estimation of my people. Every hillside, every valley, every plain and grove has been hallowed by some sad or happy event in days long vanished. Even the rocks, which seem to be dumb and dead as they swelter in the sun along the silent shore, thrill with memories of stirring events connected with the lives of my people. And the very dust upon which you now stand responds more lovingly to their footsteps than yours, because it is rich with the blood of our ancestors, and our bare feet are conscious of the sympathetic touch. Our departed braves, fond mothers, glad, happy-hearted maidens, and even the little children who lived here and rejoiced here for a brief season will love these somber solitudes, and at eventide they greet shadowy returning spirits. And when the last red man shall have perished, and the memory of my tribe shall have become a myth among the white men, these shores will swarm with the invisible dead of my tribe, and when your children's children think themselves alone in the field, the store, the shop, upon the highway, or in the silence of the pathless woods, they will not be alone. In all the earth there is no place dedicated to solitude. At night when the streets of your cities and villages are silent and you think them deserted, they will throng with the returning hosts that once filled them and still love this beautiful land. The white man will never be alone. Let him be just and deal kindly with my people, for the dead are not altogether powerless. Undeniably, Buzzkiller, it's a beautiful speech. But there's no good evidence that this is actually what he said. The problem starts with the transcription and translation. Seattle rose to respond to Governor Stevens, and all accounts say that he spoke for a long time and with great dignity. Seattle, however, spoke in the Lushootseed language. Someone in the audience translated that into Chinook jargon, which was a pidgin language used for trading and only had a basic vocabulary. A third person, who we don't know now, translated the Chinook jargon version into English. So right off the bat, the speech has been filtered from Seattle's original language through Chinook jargon, which is like filtering it through Morse code and losing all its subtleties on the way. And then that Chinook jargon version got translated into English. You see where the problems are building up here. In order to translate any trading language like Chinook jargon into a full language like English, you have to add words back in. The English translator didn't know Seattle's original words. He didn't know Seattle's original language. And so he used whatever English words seemed to fit best. Okay, you say, Professor, big deal. This is a thing that gets you professor types all exercise, but it's all a technicality. Even through all those filters, surely we have the essence of what Seattle wanted to say, don't we? It's good enough for posters in dorms and yoga studios, right? Wrong. The speech that is most well known wasn't even written down until 33 years later by Dr. Henry A. Smith. Smith was at the 1855 speech and took notes. His notes were more about Seattle's speaking style than the actual transcription. But because of Smith's very limited knowledge of Seattle's own language and vocabulary, and because he got what he got through, filtered through Chinook jargon, he said himself that he only recorded, quote, but a fragment of Chief Seattle's speech. That didn't stop him from writing a very flowery version of the surviving transcription and translation of Lachute's Sea to Chinook jargon to English, third-hand at best version. And that became the poster, the greeting card, the popular version that people know and love today. But that's not all, Buzzkillers. Some of Chief Seattle's most famous quotes, and again, I'm putting quotes in quotation marks, how about that? They come from his letter to President Franklin Pierce, asking for concessions to Native Americans and for more respect for nature and the land. In that letter, many of the themes of the famous speech I just recounted are repeated. Allegedly, Chief Seattle also wanted his name to be removed from the city in Northwest Washington and disappear when Washington became a state. As if by becoming a state, it was sort of the final nail in the coffin of Native American culture, and Seattle didn't want his own name attached to any of it. Here are some of the quotes, brief quotes that you get from the so-called letter to Franklin Pierce. Every part of all this soil is sacred to my people. Every hillside, every valley, every plain and grove has been hallowed by some sad or happy event in the days long vanished. You notice how a lot of this is very close to what the other speech was supposed to have said. The very dust you now stand on responds more willingly to their footsteps than to yours, because it is rich with the blood of our ancestors, and our bare feet are conscious of the sympathetic touch. Let him be just and deal kindly with my people, for the dead are not powerless. Dead, did I say? There is no death, only change of worlds. We know that the white man does not understand our ways. One portion of the land is the same to him as the next, for he is a stranger who comes in the night and takes from the land whatever he needs. The earth is not his brother, but his enemy. And when he has conquered it, he moves on. He leaves his father's graves, and his children's birthright is forgotten. Tribe follows tribe. Nations follow nations like the tides of the sea. It is the order of nature, and regret is useless. Today is fair. Tomorrow may be overcast with clouds. My words are like the stars that never change. How can you buy or sell the sky, the warmth of the land? Every part of the earth is sacred to my people. Every shining pine needle, every sandy shore, every mist in the dark woods, every clearing, and every humming insect is holy in the memory and experience of my people. The sap which courses through the trees carries the memory of the red man. The perfumed flowers are our sisters. The deer, the horse, the great eagle, these are our brothers. The rocky crests, the juices in the meadows, the body heat of the pony and man all belong to the same family. The shining water that moves in the streams and rivers is not just water, but the blood of our ancestors. If we sell you land, you must remember that it is sacred. And you must teach your children that it is sacred, and that the ghostly reflection in the clear water of the lakes tells us events and memories in the lives of my people. The rivers carry our canoes, feed our children. If we sell our land, you must learn and teach your children that the rivers are our brothers and yours, and you must henceforth give the rivers the kindness you would give any brother. Humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread within it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. All things are bound together. All things connect. The earth does not belong to man. Man belongs to the earth. Man did not weave the web of life. He's merely a strand in it. Whatever he does to the web, he does to himself. Alas, Buzzkillers, you know what I'm going to say. There's no evidence that any such letter to President Franklin was ever written, ever sent, or ever received. No such letter exists in the archives. There's no record of the president receiving such a letter, and presidential secretaries, in fact, all government secretaries, usually kept very, very detailed and careful logs of correspondence. And in 1992, the letter with all these quotes was shown to be a forgery. It was cooked up by Ted Perry, a scriptwriter who was working on a historical epic in 1971. Now, Perry may have not intentionally tried to forge this. He was just working on a historical script and using lots of the ideas from Seattle's original quote speech. It was through very many filters and very many hands. it's almost impossible to say for certain what people actually said in the past unless there's very good evidence. And certainly in this case, there isn't. That's not to take anything away from the wisdom that Chief Seattle may have had or the wisdom that he may have expressed, not only to his own people, but to settlers and other Native American groups. But we dishonor the great man, frankly, by putting words in his mouth that we actually know not to be true. Certainly this stuff in the letter to President Franklin is not true. And it's very unlikely that the phraseology that's come down to us in the original Chief Seattle speech has any basis in evidence. So let's think about what Chief Seattle did for his people. And let's not put false words in his mouth. Talk to you next week. Over and out.
This is Aunt Ginger from Professor Buzzkill, and you're listening to the Epicast Network.
Epicast.